This is Robin with Queer Lehigh Valley, where we talk about everything queer in the Lehigh Valley. And I'm super excited to be chatting today with my friend Gabby. We're going to be talking about rainbow capitalism and queer futures in the Lehigh Valley. Big things to cover in a 30-minute episode, but I'm excited to dive into it with you.
Hi.
I love that you sound slightly scared.
It's a little intimidating.
Yeah, I hear you. Can you tell listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So my full name is Gabby Hochfeld, and I use she, they pronouns. I work at Lafayette College, and my job title is quite a long one because that's what they like to do in higher ed. And the way they make me feel important is that I'm the Assistant Director of Intercultural Development and Coordinator of Gender and Sexuality Programs. So I have been for the past 2 years doing queer work with college students and employees of the college, and it's been very intersectionally minded because we've been down on staff a bit. So the intercultural part is quite heavy. Mm-hmm. Actually, sometimes I feel like I'm potentially like slightly neglecting the focus on the queer part,
mm-hmm.
Just because of how much work there is to be done with like solidarity.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's like in a nutshell who I am these days, though I do other things. But yeah, that's my 9 to 5.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Also, roller skater.
Roller skating.
Likes yeah. goofs and laughs.
Yeah.
Very important parts of
local funny girl.
Yes. And I yeah. should have mentioned, too, I use any pronouns. I realize I didn't say that in the intro. So we've known each other for a while now. When did you start doing queer work in the Lehigh Valley?
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, I would define it as, like, so I went to Moravian College in my undergrad, though I don't have the overgrad or whatever you call it. That's where I started to fall in love with queer community. I did, like, a local queer group called Spectrum, and I was the secretary because I never win anything popularity contest unless it's the secretary for some reason. So I take pretty good notes. But beyond that, my queer work started at the Bradbury Sullivan LGBT Community Center. I had an internship there when I was in college, but it was like not incredibly. I was like putting silent auction sort of signs together, which was helpful for sure, but
edifying about yeah. nonprofit work.
Yeah, it was actually like retrospectively very indicative of what would come of
yeah.
my knowledge of nonprofit work. But I would say more intentionally, I got a job at that same place, and Robin and I did a lot of fun stuff there. Robin was my boss for a hot sec. That was like, those were the good old days, I would define them as.
It was a good time. Yeah. It was a good time being professional gays together.
Yes.
So not a super easy transition, but it's like related. So we talked a little bit about what we wanted to talk about in this episode, and it kind of kept coming back to around the subject of rainbow capitalism. How would you describe rainbow capitalism for listeners who are like, I think I know what capitalism is, but where does the rainbow come from in that?
Yeah, I would say it's like a massive performance of solidarity with the LGBTQIA plus community on a very surface level.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of rainbows, lots of saying that there is support in a way that makes them money.
Mm.
Such as like the when I think like my quintessential thought about it is like the Target section
yeah.
of Pride, which haven't been to a Target since folks have been boycotting them. Though I do have a $10 gift card, which makes me feel, I think I have to spend it. Like, mm-hmm. that's the ethical right thing to do.
You wait till the Pride stuff goes on clearance and get something silly.
I just love that dollar section, though.
That's really fair.
It makes them money ultimately. It is a strategic move to position themselves with what will appeal to their audience.
Mm-hmm.
There are better and worse forms of it, certainly, mm-hmm. but I also have just noticed that apparently those sorts of loud and proud, air quotes heavy on that, have mm-hmm. just kind of died down since the climate has maybe shifted slightly worse.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely feel like I have like a similar definition. I think the key word that I usually use is like extractive.
Mm.
So there's some quality to what's being marketed that's not necessarily benefiting LGBTQ plus people. It might be actually profiting off of them, right. which is kind of like some of the examples that you gave. And I think to varying degrees, different corporations have like maybe dipped their toe in it being more equitable at some point. And I'm not going to say that nobody does things more equitably, but I think that by and large, at least we're coming off of Pride Month. And I think that that is something that I've been sitting with. I'm curious how you saw it showing up this past Pride Month, or if you felt like you saw it in the same ways you have maybe in the past.
Yeah, I think I just haven't seen it as much, but I also have not been necessarily a whole human this month. I moved, and that took like a couple of weeks to kind of get settled. Yeah, I just feel like it's been a lot of transition because working in higher ed, mm-hmm. once the students are out, like we solidify all our budgets.
Mm-hmm.
We had our carpets redone. So I had to move my personal life. I had to move my professional life momentarily. So I feel like I kind of haven't been able to go and experience it. I also, and maybe this is really, this can be tied in however you want to do it, but I kind of hate going to Pride festivals now. I feel like I have some, like, while like I think there's a lot to love about Pride festivals and stuff and like embracing the queer mm-hmm. community, I'm not really somebody who aesthetically enjoys all of the Pride, air quotes again, Pride festival-y mm-hmm. kinds of aesthetics. And I just find myself, I don't know, it's always too hot, it's overstimulating. That's so fair. I feel like again, it's extractive. Like I have to spend money in order to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it feels like I'm not the target audience even for the Pride Festival. Like mm-hmm. I like drag a lot, but I also, I don't know, if it were a Pride Festival for my kind of queer, it would be like a zine making thing mm-hmm. and a circle time conversation. Mm. not necessarily brought to you by Tito's or something like that. So, but like, I get that that's like what a lot of people enjoy. So I feel like I'm not like especially tuned in or plugged in to Pride because I used to have to work it, and I also do queer work for a living. So sometimes like it's nice to
be unplugged from it. That's so fair.
But I will be going to the picnic on the 12th. Is it the 12th? Corinne mentioned it. Yeah, I do want to get back plugged in because I want to be around more community.
Yeah.
But I just need like a fat moment. It happened to be June.
That's super fair. I share a lot of feelings about Pride festivals. Like I feel very excited that people get a chance to come together.
Yeah.
And especially like queer artists get a chance to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still like a complicated relationship. Like I'm somebody who I both work full-time, well, part-time, full-time.
You're in the gig economy and also not in the gig economy.
For a nonprofit. And then I also do, like, queer art. So, like, Pride has, like, a weird position of, like, I'm basically always working. And I think that that gives me, like, a complicated relationship to the festivals because I'm generally working. And if I'm not, someone will come up to me and make me be working, which is fine because I really do like, I love our community. It's really great to connect to people. I think I just wish that we could maybe spread out some of that energy. Like, I think Pride is a really beautiful time. At the same time, there is that like abundance of the rainbow capitalism kind of stuff too. I think I have a hard time like being at, like I was at a Pride festival that was like sponsored by Amazon. I think my mind goes to like, I have tons of queer friends who work in those warehouses.
Sure.
And it's like, I guess I'd rather some of the money go to queer people, but I also see some of those corporations like labor practices. And I think like, I would rather them not sponsor Pride and like be better to their workers and like be more yeah. kind to the people who are being forced to be part of that economy. And so I think like it's complicated, right? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I do feel like something that feels a little insufferable at times about not every queer community, but like the communities that are putting on Pride festivals is that it does feel quite detached from the origins of Pride, which is that it was a riot.
Yeah.
'Cause like I see police.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it gets so like complicated and stuff, but ultimately like that feels detached. But then also, oh God, I had a thought and it escaped me, but if it comes back, then it'll be a nice thought. But yeah, I just don't feel like it's super connected to like the reason where like it doesn't feel historical. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. Oh, that this is the thought is that the queer community can feel very isolated from mm-hmm. other communities, even though, of course, there's queer people in every kind of community.
Mm-hmm.
But it does at times feel like because of this detachment, it might feel like very white. It could mm-hmm. feel very, you know, not for people who don't have money. Like yeah. It feels a little soulless sometimes, mm-hmm. and that kind of energy also deters me from wanting to be around it. There's like a Pride festival that happens. I don't know if it's already happened, but the Sun in Pride.
Oh, that one's cute.
Cute. I really do like it too. And that's because I think the reason why that feels different is because like it's like a bartender who works at the Sun Inn who like thought of it, and like he's like connected to mm-hmm. a lot of people in the valley. Like I think the more, and it's not a huge thing. Like it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Like the one that's like Lehigh Valley Pride, that is now at Arts Quest, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's huge. And like, you know, that's like a lot of labor on the employees, I'm sure. It's labor on, which, you know, it deserves in some ways to be large,
mm-hmm.
but it does still feel like that same note. And like, I know the one at Sun Inn has like a lot of little vendors, and like it's DJ Brad Scott. Like, like I think like those little like Lehigh Valley things are what make it feel cozy to me, mm-hmm. and like they also had like the little spritzy stations
because
mm-hmm. it's hot. Yeah, I don't know. I loved that the Lehigh Valley Pride would do like the prayer, the spirituality thing. Mm-hmm. That feels sweet because, you know, it shows that like not every religious space is hostile.
Yeah. Yeah, and like that there's other people who might experience that, like moment to come together with other folks for sure. And I do, like, echo some of your feelings about, I really love, like, tiny Pride festivals. Yeah. I got very lucky to attend a few of them through my work. And I think, I generally feel like probably one of my favorites is, like, in the parking lot of a library. Aww. And it's mostly just, like, middle schoolers who are running around being, like, queer middle schoolers and, like, having a really nice time. And some, like, hyper local musicians who are just, like, playing acoustic guitar kind of music, and a bunch of local artists, but a lot of the artists at that one are like people who this might be their like first or second ever of like opportunity to sell their stuff, and I really like that.
Yeah.
Part
of me also like wonders how like this impacts the community afterwards. Yeah, it's great that it's a celebration. I think our community deserves a celebration. It's freaking hard to be a queer person,
mm-hmm.
especially right now. But yeah, sometimes I wonder, like, where all this money goes and mm-hmm. Who is actually benefiting. And if it's not first and foremost queer people, then mm-hmm. I think there should be, like, a look in the mirror, potentially.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know what the, like, I may have used to know that when I worked for other places that mm-hmm. would put on Pride festivals, but I don't know it now.
mm-hmm. And it's, like, a complicated relationship between, like, money, funding, programming, and that kind of gets into some of the complicatedness of, like, doing any kind of DEI or marginalized community-focused, like, nonprofit work, really.
Totally.
I think that in the next section, we'll talk a little bit more about what we might think of some of the answers or, like, remedies for rainbow capitalism, all those kinds of dynamics might be, but we're going to take a short break, and then we'll come back and chat more. I'm Robin, and I'm here with Gabby, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
WDIY 88.1 offers many choices and real voices. Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all here on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR News headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. on 88.1 WDIY and streaming at WDIY.org.
Hi, this is Robin with Queerly High Valley, and I'm here talking with Gabby, and we're talking a little bit about rainbow capitalism and futures of the LGBTQ plus community in the Lehigh Valley. Before our break, we were talking a little bit about some of the things that make us resonate with a Pride Festival or with LGBTQ plus efforts by all different kinds of organizations, or what things don't. And I guess in talking about rainbow capitalism, what are some of the things that we can imagine, like, in its place, something less extractive? So where does your mind go when you think of, like, what the inverse of that would be?
Well, I think maybe direct or indirect result of rainbow capitalism, and maybe a lot of other kinds of capitalism of other communities, is the DEI world. And it's, like, a whole entire field. Like, and I know that, like, since the Trump presidency, there was a lot of companies getting rid of their DEI sects, and, you know, that's when, like, Costco got really popular, and they're like, oh, they're still doing DEI. I'm like, okay, but they're still, like,
yeah,
creation. But, you know, it's like, yeah. But I think, like, what I see replacing rainbow capitalism would be taking these really great, like, the places that still have DEI, such as Lafayette, which technically they don't. A lot of places actually don't. They just, like, kind of renamed it so that they could get around some threats. there's, like, a Dear Colleagues letter that went out to all the colleges that have, like, an endowment over $1 million. That's and that's when they, like, started to really shift the language.
For people who don't know what that means, can you just, like, walk through, like, what the that letter meant?
Sure. It basically was a letter from, I think, like, the Department of Education. I forget which, insert insult here to that person. I forget which one of them it was. Basically saying, dear colleagues, we don't think it's okay to give extra things because of who a person might be. Like, basically just anti-DEI, and if you don't get rid of it, you will not get funding anymore. Which, for private institutions, is really cool, because that means that they're not as threatened, which Lafayette College is not a private, or is not a public institution. But that means a lot for public institutions. It means a lot if you're a private institution getting a lot of public funding. It means a lot if you have really big endowments about that are from people or entities that support this administration. So you can kind of tell who was affected by that if you can't tell if they have DEI anymore. And some places didn't, like Lehigh is not publicly funded in that way either, but they changed everything. They still have all, like, they still do queer work, they still do intercultural work, but it is, like, now, like, intercultural excellence or something like that, which is also, like, crazy language. But so that's in a nutshell. Higher ed, I'm realizing, is definitely a space that is reactionary rather than pioneering. The students could be pioneering, some of the faculty might be pioneering, but generally the administration pushes back heavily because they're just always afraid of lawsuits. And also they're all, like, broke. At least that's the writing on the wall a lot of places. I don't know about Lafayette. It seems like I have job stability, but I'm also, like, if I lost my job at any point, I wouldn't be surprised. And that's just more so a statement about, like, the state of things rather
in
than like, no offense, Lafayette. I talk about this, like, very openly also. But yeah, so I would like to see these spaces that were created performatively, so DEI spaces, be used actually as ways to enact change. Sometimes it feels like I hear all of the woes and then I bring those woes to the places of power, and then it's like, that's interesting, that's a conversation. Or, like, we're going to put a pause on that for now because mm-hmm. we need to have the right people in the room mm-hmm. or something like that. And I'm like, okay. And I generally have like a humble mentality about positions of power because like I've never really had that much power. Mm-hmm. And the more power I get, the more I realize everything's really complicated. So I like really give the benefit of the doubt to people who have much more chaotic amounts of power than I do mm-hmm. and realize that there's probably something I don't know. Mm-hmm. But then it goes on. Yeah. And then I'm like, what are you doing? What's going yeah. on? And I fear that it is just that, like, all this mindfulness and all this therapy pacifies us. Yeah, so yeah. I would like to see more entitlement to these solutions. If your workplace, like Amazon has an employee resource group yeah. for queer people, that would mean that they care about queer people, right? So they should hear the woes of the employee resource group and then make changes. And if they don't make changes, there should be a sense of entitlement about those changes. And mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think there needs to be more solidarity. And then maybe that's like a call to action on the masses rather than the people who yeah. air quotes hold power. But yeah, I definitely feel like the rainbow capitalism, I think a lot of people are like, well, it's so much better because now it's like socially acceptable. And I'm like, okay, but it's been. Mm-hmm. For the most part, maybe a loud minority are mm-hmm. gross about it.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. You said lots of things. Sorry. I want to pick threads in, but I'm trying to circle to what I think might be most fruitful.
Yeah.
I think that I am really interested in, like, some of the things that you said about, like, DEI and maybe not always moving somewhere.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that I've struggled with. In how it's been set up in a lot of corporations and mm-hmm. a lot of institutions like higher ed, I think that it's better that it's there than it's not.
For sure.
But I think something pre this current wave of like backlash to DEI, I had a lot of critiques of some of the ways that it manifested because I see like the exact dynamic you're talking about. And then just to like specifically pick on Amazon because I have been in an Amazon and I've done like a program for a working group. And people talked about, like, how depressed they felt because of the hours. Walking in there felt like walking into a prison. Like, you had
Yikes.
To you had to scan my ID. I was not allowed to be anywhere alone. I wasn't allowed to take out my phone. It was a really weird experience. And I think I hold that when I see them fund something. I think, like, about those queer people who were doing a job that was really, 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 like, soul-crushing.
Sure.
And a lot of that warehouse work really is. And so, like, of course I want them to give $5,000 to so-and-so ever pride. But I think about those people and I think, like, I would honestly would prefer to see the real material change. And I like what you said about, like, maybe the decisions shouldn't be held by, like, anointed positions of power, but by what people want who are being most impacted by whether it's racism or whether it's queer phobia. So
I think every person who's marginalized needs to rewatch A Bug's Life. That's my homework, if you're listening.
That's so fair. That's really fair.
We outnumber them.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And like, I think that people get scared by some of those ideas. But yeah. The truth is that like wanting to be treated well and nice right. in a scenario, like these are not radical ideas. They're like pretty much baseline. Everybody deserves to be able to make an income that doesn't make them feel like they have no life outside of that, you know, that
right.
kind of
or
stuff.
Or like if you can't afford to pay us better, how about making your policies more inclusive of queer relationships and mm-hmm. queer lifestyles? Like I loved that the center had a pet bereavement policy because mm-hmm. a lot of us don't, but also at the same time they didn't have a maternity leave policy because it was like a lot of gay men, and then we had somebody who was like pregnant, and then we were like, okay, so how do we refashion this temporary disability to mm-hmm. like actually support, because like we want to support her.
yeah
So it's like interesting how like sometimes, you know, it just depends on who is being centered and then what is being left out. So
yeah,
how do we center better?
Yeah, and then like trying to find those solutions when those things come
up.
To end on like a little bit more of a like uplifting note, because this is hard and capitalism makes me sad. What are some things that excite you about the future of the Valley and things that you're seeing maybe counter to rainbow capitalism or some of the more institutional DEI kind of stuff?
Mm-hmm. After our time at the center, I think you and Rain and others like started the mutual aid, QDLV, join QDLV. That excites me. I love all of the mutual aid work happening in the Lehigh Valley. I see a lot of people showing up in these spaces, and I see a lot of the same people showing up in all different spaces, which means that there's solidarity, which I love to see. So I think like making, you know, I'm excited that like, I also have noticed like in previous years, like these folks getting burnt out, and I'm realizing people know how to like take their time with it a little better. Like we're starting to be less newbie at it, which is exciting too. I just hope people stick around long enough for us to like build some stuff here. That would be exciting to me. But I also know that like life takes us all in different directions. But it seems like there's some pretty good roots happening. What else? I mean, yeah, I think the there's like something really special happening with the community here. I think that even this kind of space that WDIY is hosting is really special too.
Yeah, not everywhere has like public media in general. So yeah, I think that that's really beautiful.
Yeah, leaning into these kinds of spaces while colleges and academia can feel a little dystopian, it's still cool that I can be me and support students. So I feel like if you're still able to do the work and the work's not perfect, like it's gonna, like it's okay. But I do hope that like people stand in their conviction. I think that's the thing that I'm seeing that I have a lot of regret about. Some of the most controversial things happening right now, I think a lot of people are upset about, but they don't say it. So I'm wondering how we can have more solidarity and connection about these things. So I feel like, dear listeners, I would hope that you feel empowered to talk to somebody about the things that you feel passionate about, because you're probably not alone. And if we all did that, we'd have some more discourse, and then kind of like that Socrates, Plato sort of higher conversations, we could move to a better place together.
Yeah, I definitely
that's my feel political like science degree coming out.
I definitely feel like there's a lot of pressure to not acknowledge when really scary things are happening.
And you don't have to have perfect conversation. Yeah. Like, and also we can apologize when we say something offensive if we've offended somebody. Like, it's okay. I feel like that, sorry to have cut you off.
No, but you're fine.
As a person who's in DEI and sometimes feels like I'm, air quotes, the DEI police, I really try to destigmatize that, because like, I love having, some of my favorite people happen to have very opposite ideas than I do. Like, some of my sisters' in-laws are, like, very deep conservative, but also are, like, the kindest people, like, wouldn't turn anyone away. And while I disagree with a lot of their beliefs, I do think, like, when we have actual discourse, we're more on the same page than you might think.
And that can be really helpful for, like, bridging some of those gaps and bringing more community together.
Totally.
I was reflecting as you were talking about like things that excite me in the Lehigh Valley. Yeah. I really think that a lot of the work around like immigration justice that I've seen
totally
has been really positive, just to see a lot of people from different backgrounds, people who haven't been involved in stuff before, showing up to something and showing up with the energy of like, I need to do something, I don't know what yet. And I appreciate like some of the humility I've seen in that space. So more of that. And I think that, like you said, I think that there are some really good roots in the Valley, and we can build a lot of fun things that can be radical without having to be not fun, you know? I think sometimes when people hear criticism of Pride or rainbow capitalism, a response I get a lot of times is like, I just want to have fun. And I'm like, I really relate to that.
Sure.
It can be exhausting to engage in some of the complexities of the world.
Yeah.
At the same time, like, we can have fun without Amazon. We really can.
Yeah.
Not to harp on them, there's a really easy, clear example.
Crowdfund some alcohol money and just do it yourself. I don't know.
Responsibly.
Sure. I can't even drink anymore, so it's like,
I know, okay. Me too. Anyhow, this has been a really great chat.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. I really appreciate all the thoughts that you shared. This has been Queer Hilly High Valley. I'm your host, Robin, and this has been my guest, Gabby.